WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight on the Towel Mikey D, coming your way later tonight with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 remains the telephone number. Please don't call unless it's an emergency, because I got a lot of buttons to press. I got a lot of things to do. I need a producer. Somebody find me a producer for free. Maybe Ray LaHood is worth $35,000 a month to be my producer. I don't know. What I do know is that I predict things. If you listen to this show, you have heard me make predictions. I made one in the last segment. My prediction is that the coming recession is going to be light and short duration. Okay, I don't think it's even going to last for a year. I think it's going to last two quarters. It's going to meet the technical definition of a recession. It won't be any worse than that. The day that Jeffrey Epstein was found dead, it was a Saturday, as I recall, and I was talking to my wife that night, and I said this to other people that weekend as well. I said, we are going to learn three things about the Jeffrey Epstein suicide. Number one, protocol was not followed. That some condition of how he was held or something that was supposed to happen wasn't done. Number two, and we found that out. Jeffrey Epstein was supposed to have a cellmate. His cellmate was taken away the night before, and he was all by himself in his cell. The second thing I said was going to happen is we will find out that the guards had in some way, shape, or form been compromised. And what did we find out? The guards were asleep when they were supposed to be guarding Jeffrey Epstein and had, in fact, made up their entries in the logbook saying that they had checked on Jeffrey Epstein. In fact, they had not. They were sleeping at their guard post. Number three, and I said all this to my wife Saturday night. She asked me, did you hear about Epstein? I said, I'm not surprised. And I said, three things are going to happen. Number one, you're going to find out protocol wasn't followed. Number two, you're going to find out that something was up with the guards. And number three, the video will be unusable. Well, SF Gate tells us footage from camera outside Epstein's cell deemed unusable. Do I really need to say anything more than that? Do we need more than the headline in this case? Footage from camera outside Epstein's cell deemed unusable. That gives me the perfect trifecta. Guards not doing what they're supposed to be doing. The camera is not working, and protocol was not followed. From SF Gate, at least one camera in the hallway outside the cell where authorities say registered sex offender Jeffrey Epstein hanged himself. Interesting choice of language there, by the way. Authorities say, it's not the cell where Jeffrey Epstein hanged himself. It's the cell where authorities say sex offender Jeffrey Epstein hanged himself. Important word choice there. That's an alleged. That's the equivalent of saying allegedly hanged himself. Earlier this month had footage that is unusable, although other clearer footage was captured in the area, according to three people briefed on the evidence gathered earlier this month. It was not immediately clear why some video footage outside Epstein's cell is too flawed for investigators to use or what is visible in the other usable footage. I'm going to go out on a limb and say nothing is visible in the other usable footage. The incident is being investigated by the FBI and the Justice Department's Inspector General's office, which are attempting to determine what happened and how to assess whether any policies were violated, yes, or crimes committed. Maybe. The footage is considered critical to those inquiries, and the revelation of an unusable recording is yet another of the apparent failures inside the Metropolitan Correctional Center, but utterly predictable. Utterly predictable. It is unclear whether the flaw in the taping affected a limited duration of the footage or whether it was a chronic problem in the beleaguered facility. Okay, let's stop talking about the beleaguered facility and let's talk about this. I am not a conspiracy theorist by nature, okay? I am not a conspiracy theorist by trade. I like to debunk conspiracy theories. Most conspiracies are complete and utter nonsense. Conspiracies demand the silence of the participants and the sacrifice of participants who will not be silent. It is very, very difficult to pull off a conspiracy, which is why people talk about, oh, you know, JFK conspiracy and 9/11 was an inside job. No, it's nonsense. Utter nonsense. The number of people that you would have needed to pull that off is immense. And you're not getting away with it. Someday I'll tell you my JFK theory. Because I do think JFK was an inside job. Everybody believes something crazy. Okay? 5% of what you believe is insane. This is true of 100% of people. 5% of what you believe is just nuts. Okay? And you were convinced of it. We're going to talk about that in a minute, too. Protocol was not followed. Epstein was not supposed to be in a cell by himself. The guards were asleep. And now we have no video. The three things that I said were going to happen the night that we found out that Jeffrey Epstein was dead have all happened. Now, in spite of all of this, I have no reason to think that Jeffrey Epstein did anything other than hang himself. I have no reason to believe that he did anything other than commit suicide. I believe Jeffrey Epstein killed himself. He may have been told to do so by someone. I will leave the door open for that. He may have been murdered. Missing guards. But this is the thing. SF Gate, generally speaking, half-decent news outlet. Okay? San Francisco Gate is actually pretty good. But when they start using phrases like authorities say Jeffrey Epstein hanged himself, they're leaving a door open. Authorities say. It's not the cell where Jeffrey Epstein hanged himself. It's the cell where authorities say Jeffrey Epstein hanged himself. They're leaving a door open. And they are leaving a door open for the conspiracy theory. And the problem with what is going on, what we've learned about Jeffrey Epstein's death, is that everything here fits what a conspiracy theorist would want to see. Guards are compromised. Protocol hasn't been followed. Oh, and the video cameras don't work. It was Mossad. It was the U.S. government. Bill Clinton did it. Yeah, Trump retweeted that, or one of Trump's supporters retweeted that. Clinton did it. Goodell did it. Goodell did Epstein. As far as I'm concerned, Jeffrey Epstein hanged himself. That is the most likely scenario here. But As I mentioned a few weeks ago, you have another high-profile sexual abuse case with a lot of very powerful people involved that does not go to trial once again. They never, ever do. Why is that? Is it because the participants are so overcome with shame and remorse that they kill themselves? Jeffrey Epstein did not have a lot of remorse about what he'd done. Is it because Jeffrey Epstein was told, we're going to give you an opportunity to do the right thing, and if you don't, we're going to do the right thing for you, and it's going to be much less pleasant than what you might do yourself? In other words, hang yourself or we're going to torture you? That's plausible. I want to know who saw Jeffrey Epstein, who was coming and going. Who spoke with him? Were any messages handed to him? Who was speaking to him in the prison? These are all things that they should be investigating. Did someone get to Jeffrey Epstein and say, listen, early Saturday morning, you're going to have a window and you're either going to do the right thing or we're going to take you out later on. That's your choice. And so he goes and kills himself. That is murder, isn't it? I think that's a form of murder. Encouraging someone to kill themselves, or you're going to kill them. The other possibility is that someone went in and murdered Jeffrey Epstein. And as I've said on that front, I think the only possibility for that is Mossad. They're the only ones I can think of that would have the ability to pull off an operation like that in the United States and the motivation to do it. But here we are. Jeffrey Epstein, no video, no guards, no cellmate. Something is rotten in this whole thing, and he may have just simply killed himself, but we have now given everyone everything that they need to invoke their conspiracy theories. So, well done on that front. Back right after this. If this decides to play, that's... Oh, you know what? I am doing the wrong thing here. Oops. How do I stop that? No, stop doing that. Don't do that anymore. It is, in fact, this button that I press, and the phone's gone. All right. That was a phone call. Sorry if you're trying to get through. If it was for Joel, he's here. He should be letting the band in. If it was for me, please call back a bit later. So there we are, Jeffrey Epstein. In other news, this... Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What is wrong with America? I mean, honestly, what is wrong? Not with everybody. Hopefully, not with you, not with my listeners, because I think you are people of above average intelligence who don't use Twitter. But if you're on Twitter, I'm gonna tell you right now, just stop. Get it out of your life. Turn it off. Forget about it. Delete the app. Because every now and again, we hit new heights of stupidity on the internet. And I shouldn't even have to talk about this. I shouldn't even have to explain this to anybody, except that this story has been blowing up all over the place, and it is utterly stupid on so many different levels that I can't ignore it. So my valuable time, which could be spent talking about important things, now has to be spent talking about Olive Garden. You probably heard it from Fast Company. Is Olive Garden funding Trump? How a false rumor ignited a Twitter boycott. The hashtag boycott Olive Garden went viral this week on Twitter amid claims that the Italian restaurant chain was helping to fund President Trump's re-election campaign. The problem, according to the restaurant and independent researchers, is that it's just not true. Quote, "We don't know where this information came from, but it is incorrect," wrote Olive Garden spokesperson Megan Bernstein in an email to Fast Company. Quote, "Our company does not donate to presidential candidates," end quote. The fact-checking website Snopes confirmed that claim in a post relying on campaign finance data from the Center for Responsive Politics, saying Olive Garden and its parent company Darden don't maintain a political action committee. Donations from Darden affiliates, such as Olive Garden employees, were about equally divided between Republicans and Democrats in 2018. In 2016, Hillary Clinton got almost 10 times as much in donations from Darden affiliates as Trump did, according to the data. Still, that didn't stop what cybersecurity firm Nisos estimates were more than 52,500 tweets, retweets, and quote tweets on Sunday and Monday using the Boycott Olive Garden hashtag. If you are one of those 52,500 people, you are what's wrong with America. You are the problem. You need to own that, and you need to embrace that. You are stupid. And you are the problem. Liberals appeared to endorse the boycott, while conservatives defended the company and critiqued the proposed protest, according to a report from City Otis, Director of Analysis, Nisos. The initial claim apparently came from a Twitter post on a college professor's account. The professor appears to have since deleted her account. She earlier said it was hacked. That is the second great lie of the scoundrel. The first great lie of the scoundrel is, I didn't do it. The second great lie of the scoundrel is, I was hacked. So what happened? This rando on the internet, this rando university professor tweets that Olive Garden is funding Trump's re-election. Quote, "Olive Garden is funding Trump's re-election in 2020. It would be terrible if you shared this and Olive Garden lost business. I'm not going to name the university professor. You can go find her name online if you want to. She says she was hacked. Okay. No, you were not hacked, university professor. You wrote that, and you need to own that. America would be a lot better off if stupid people on Twitter would own their stupid. No, she's going to say she was hacked. Who's going to hack you, rando university professor? Nobody's going to hack you, okay? You may be familiar with the concept of Occam's razor. Occam's razor basically says, given two possible scenarios, the most likely scenario is the truth. So here are two possible scenarios. Somebody hacked a random university professor's account to spread lies about Olive Garden. Or, university professor didn't get enough breadsticks and said, Olive Garden shall feel my wrath. I will use the power of the internet to destroy them. And goes and tweets this. And then the thing blows up. 50,000 retweets. Almost 59,000 likes. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Don't get any stupider than this, people. Some rando on the internet said Olive Garden supports Trump. Boycott Olive Garden. First of all, do you really want to put all the people who work at Olive Garden out of business because you don't like that somebody in the organization might have donated money to Trump? Isn't this the pro-middle class, pro-worker, you know, pro-fast food worker, pro-chain worker, left-wing calling for this boycott? Hey, you know what? Put everybody at Darden restaurants out of business because somebody donated to Trump. Do you even think at all? Do you think at all? Because that's the goal of the boycott, isn't it? Put them out of business. Let all those restaurant workers and managers and bartenders and barbacks and suppliers, let them all lose their jobs because somebody supported Trump. Are you kidding me? How stupid are you? Olive Garden, unfortunately, has had to spend days dealing with this. And the stupid just goes on. From their Twitter feed, and dear God, Twitter, just please. Why can't the Russians just knock Twitter offline? Why can't they do that? This is in response to someone. Damn it, I love the Zuppa Toscaria and shrimp fritta at Olive Garden. Oh well, I love democracy more. Goodbye, Olive Garden. And Olive Garden replies, we don't know where this information came from, but it is incorrect. Our company does not donate to presidential candidates. Ayn Kritz responds to this, I really hope this is true. I am a soup, salad, and breadsticks woman and a glass of red. But I have this previously. I don't know what that means. Your corporate parent hasn't made such donations? And then Deboche of Dew, Darden Restaurant, their corporate parent, donates to Trump. Vive la Resistance, Trumps are traitors, says, these are all of the brands under Darden, the corporate sponsors of the Trump campaign. Olive Garden, Longhorn Steakhouse, Cheddar's, Yard House. Put all those people out of work because maybe somebody donated money to Trump. Olive Garden replies, again, we don't know where this information came from, but it is incorrect. Our company does not donate to presidential candidates. And by the way, a corporate spokesman is not going to say this unless it's true. Because it is way too easy for some bored journalist to come along and debunk that. And say, hey, Olive Garden, you lied. You've been donating money to Trump like there's no tomorrow. We have the records. They're not going to say it if it's not true. Is that enough? No. It is for some people. I like Jim here. He says, donate to whoever you want to. Your breadsticks had me at hello. And then we have Pixie Warrior. You sure about that? Darden Restaurant Summary, Center for Responsive Politics link. Note, the organization itself did not donate. Rather, the money came from the organization's PACs. Olive Garden doesn't have any PACs. Pixie Warrior, the organization's PACs is the company in my book. Darden doesn't have any PACs. They don't have any political action committees. Wayne Parks was at Olive Garden Wednesday. Now even more glad I chose to eat there. Be stopping at more Darden restaurants in the future. Justice for all. But your CEO did, right? Talking about donations. Money in your till equals money in his pocket. I miss my trips to Olive Garden. Donna, what about your parent company, Darden? Olive Garden, their official spokesperson, again, our company, Darden, does not donate to any federal candidates. Who else have we got here? We've seen that guy already. Billy Bella, but Darden does. It takes profits from Olive Garden and other restaurants under its umbrella and donates to the fascist regime of Trump. To which Olive Garden says, to clarify, Darden does not donate to federal candidates. Billy Bella, if that's true, then Darden needs to publicly come out and say so, unless they are worried about getting the toddler-in-chief upset. Billy Bella, you dum-dum, they just said that. This is the official Olive Garden account. This is their spokesperson saying, we don't donate to federal candidates. If that's true, then Darden needs to publicly come out. They just did. They just did. How dumb can you possibly be? Now, here's a question. Are any of these people theoretically capable of admitting that they're wrong? When you have a company spokesman saying we don't do this, and you have news media saying they don't do this, at what point do you say, gee, you know what? I was wrong. Thank you for educating me. I will get on with my life. No, they can't do that. They got to dig in. Oh, well, if it's not Olive Garden, it's Darden. If it's not Darden, it's their pack. Well, if they don't have a pack, then it's some employee somewhere. Someone at Darden gave money to Trump, and we can't eat there anymore. First of all, if you're going to boycott a restaurant and you're going to try and put people out of work because they gave money to a candidate that you don't like, you are a monster. You are a monster. And you can't walk around and say, well, I'm pro-worker. And I'm pro-little guy. And I'm pro-democracy. No, you're not. You're a monster. You're a selfish baby who wants everybody to do what you say. And the world doesn't work that way. And if you want to take people's livelihood away from them because someone in an organization may have donated to Trump on their own dime, not working for the company, guess what? Pretty much any business that you walk into anywhere has people working for it who have donated to Trump. Okay, maybe not the organic food co-op, but any of your big name brands, your Starbucks, your Olive Garden, your Amazon, Facebook, if you use Facebook, has people who donate to Trump. Twitter has people who donate to Trump. Maybe you should boycott Twitter because somebody who works at Twitter has given money to Donald Trump. Maybe that's how we solve this. When the company comes out and says, we didn't do this, that's when you tweet back, I'm sorry. I was wrong to believe a rando on the internet instead of the official company spokesperson. You don't dig in and double down like a dum-dum. And here's the real problem with this. You wonder how Russian propaganda gets spread around in this country. These are the people who do it. And when I say this is what's wrong with America, this is what I'm talking about. Some rando on the internet gets all bent out of shape about breadsticks or whatever and posts they're giving money to Trump and everybody freaks out. If you're going to believe random people on the internet, we're done. You're done. You know, when I was growing up, the Russians couldn't get propaganda into this country to save their lives. Because during the Cold War, we made a point of educating children like myself and my peers about what propaganda looks like, what propaganda is. Because everybody knew that Russians would try. We expected they'd try. But they couldn't do it because we looked at everything skeptically. We said, hey, who's the source? Where is this coming from? Who is this rando on the internet? Who's this university professor? What's your source? Where are you getting this information from? I was hacked. Delete the account. By the way, if you're hacked, you can't get in and shut down your account without talking to Twitter. So if you were really hacked and you had to get back into your account, there should be a paper trail there. There should be some emails between you and Twitter restoring your access to your account. Some journalist somewhere might want to look into that instead of just taking the scoundrel's line. I was hacked. You weren't hacked. You posted this. I don't know if it's because you were angry or because you're a non-critical thinker. University professor. You're a non-critical thinker who just believes everything that you're told. This is a problem. This is where the fake news comes from. This is how the Russians get in and push buttons. And get everybody all bent out of shape. Over what? Over what? You're going to put somebody out of business because someone in the organization gave money to the Trump campaign. Shame on you. Shame on you for thinking your politics give you the right to take somebody else's job away from them. Somebody who had nothing at all to do with any donation to Donald Trump. Some random employee, some random bartender gives some money to Trump. We're going to shut down Olive Garden. Are you kidding me? You call yourself, this is the left, by the way. You call yourselves the party of the middle class. You call yourself the party of the workers. And you call for boycott after boycott after boycott to put people out of business, to put workers on the street. How is that being pro-worker? How does that benefit America? How does that do anything for anybody? You are a monster. A monster. If you support these stupid boycotts. You are an idiot. If you are sharing these tweets. You are a double idiot. If someone in a position of authority comes to you and says what you've read is a lie, and you still believe the lie. When you believe a rando on the internet over an official company spokesperson who can be vetted, who can be found out, who can be exposed, who is risking something by coming out and saying, we don't do this, period, full stop. When you still believe the rando over the company spokesman, you're an idiot. And you are exactly what the Russians are looking for. You are exactly the person that is going to push the next piece of propaganda and the next piece of propaganda after that. You are what's wrong with this country right now. And you need to smarten up. You need to get your act together. Get off Twitter. Just get off. Turn it off. People who work at Twitter have donated to the Trump campaign. Boycott Twitter. I don't care if you put Twitter out of business. I don't claim to be pro-worker, by the way. I am, generally speaking. But where Twitter is concerned, let me tell you the politics of the Darden restaurants in a nutshell. They are anti-faking steak. We know this about them. They believe that you can't fake steak, and they are pro-free breadsticks. That, I believe, is a socialist policy. Free breadsticks, free unlimited breadsticks, that smacks of socialism to me. I don't think we have to worry about the Olive Garden people putting Trump back in the White House for 4 more years. It drives me crazy. Drives me absolutely crazy that this stupidity proliferates on the internet and actually finds its way into legitimate news headlines. We can't have this. There are important things going on. The Amazon rainforest is on fire. Okay? That may be a normal thing, by the way. But you know what? If you spend any time reading about that or learning about that, or you just see the headline, rainforest is on fire. That's bad. Yes, it is bad. But we've got to spend part of every day now dealing with the stupids on Twitter. We can't do this anymore. Stop using Twitter. Stop being dumb. If you have somebody who's retweeting this nonsense or supporting this nonsense, you see the hashtag of the day showing up in their tweets, get rid of them. Block them. Cut them out of your life. They're not doing you any favors. They are wasting your time. I'd like to say things are better at the New York Times. I really would. Unfortunately, I can't. As I said, you know, grew up in the 70s and the 80s, Cold War, taught to be skeptical. And the New York Times is having a week. Oh boy, are they having a week. Dean Baquet is the managing editor, editor-in-chief, actually, of the New York Times. And he had a sit-down with all of his employees. And a transcript of that sit-down was leaked to Slate. I don't know if it was leaked so much as it was handed to them. Anyway, Slate got their hands on it. Basically ran the whole transcript, wrote an article about it, yada, yada. The New York Post weighed in on this, and as I've said in the past, the New York Post is not an unbiased news source. I fully accept this. The New York Post happens to be very good at giving you the short version, the short factual version of events when they bother to do that. And when they don't, I don't talk about their stories. In this case, we're dealing with an opinion column written by Michael Goodwin. And I've chosen to give Michael Goodwin and this column this platform on my program because he hits a lot of key points with what's going on at the New York Times right now and what's going on in their newsroom. It is important to understand when you listen to this that the New York Post is a rival of the New York Times. Those two newspapers compete for New Yorkers' eyeballs on the streets in Manhattan. They compete for our eyeballs online. And they have a vested interest in throwing each other under the bus whenever possible. So I present you the bias ahead of time so that you will know that it is there. But even in the most biased situations, little nuggets of truth creep up. So Michael Goodwin has this to say, and this is the pot calling the kettle black, by the way. Bias has killed the gray lady. It's the nickname for the New York Times. And Dean Baquet has fired the fatal shot. This is Michael Goodwin writing for the New York Post. While reading the transcript of a New York Times staff meeting, a Lily Tomlin line came to mind. Quote, "No matter how cynical you get, it is impossible to keep up." In this case, it is also impossible not to be disheartened and furious. The transcript shows that the rot of bias at the Times is far beyond the pale, and there is no hope of recovery. Yet not a single person there declared the obvious that the paper is betraying its principles. Rigor in reporting and restraint in judgment once made the gray lady noble. Now she is dead, her homicide an inside job. The transcript, leaked to Slate, reveals a confederacy of ignorance and bigotry involving hundreds of people. The ringleader is executive editor Dean Baquet, who fires the fatal shot into the credibility of his paper. By giving reporters and editors license to try to stop Donald Trump from becoming president, then letting them peddle the Russia, Russia, Russia hoax, Baquet helped unleash the hatred that is tearing America apart. This is a biased piece, but that is a factual statement. The New York Times was one of the leading proponents of the Russia story. The New York Times ran numerous retractions of its Russia coverage, and the New York Times deliberately fanned the flames of one of the most divisive political stories in U.S. history. So that is a true statement. Dean Baquet, in his role as executive editor of the New York Times, did in fact help unleash the hatred that is tearing America apart. Never before has a single media institution played such a destructive role in the nation's life. I will call that hyperbole. But Baquet is not finished. The 75-minute meeting shows he is now determined to destroy the president by painting him as a racist. Quote, "I think we've got to change," Baquet tells his assembled staff after acknowledging that the paper was, quote, "a little tiny bit flat-footed," end quote, when special counsel Robert Mueller performed so poorly before Congress. You may recall this was one of the major retractions from the New York Times. Robert Mueller was going to come in and all of these various Trump associates were going to come in. They're going to drop bombshells. Bombshells. Bombshell revelation. Bombshell. It was bombshell after bombshell after bombshell. Every last one of them was a dud. Robert Mueller didn't perform poorly before Congress. He went in and he told the truth. But Dean Baquet, executive editor of the New York Times, says, well, he performed poorly before Congress. No, Dean Baquet, he told the truth. And the truth did not fit the narrative that you were trying to sell to your readers. Or, as the New York Post says. In other words, Baquette had swallowed hook, line, and sinker Hillary Clinton's fiction that Trump conspired with Vladimir Putin to steal the election. Then again, this is the same editor whose paper was certain Clinton would win in 2016. Quite a track record. Which leads to Baquette's newest idea for stopping Trump. Quote, this is Dean Baquette speaking during this meeting with his journalists. How do we cover a guy who makes these kinds of remarks? How do we cover the world's reaction to him? How do we cover America that's become so divided by Donald Trump? America hasn't been divided by Donald Trump, Dean Baquette. It's been divided by the media that keeps harping on this point. Oh, we're divided. Every time you pick up the newspaper, every time you look online, every time you turn on the TV or the radio, America's divided, America's divided, America's divided. Excuse me if I don't see it as being that bad, okay? I see some weekend warriors who like to go to Portland, Oregon, and some of them dress up in black and hide their faces and carry bear spray and bike locks and clubs. And some of them like to put on MAGA hats and American flags. And they like to get together and punch each other for the weekend. Okay. Is that a divided America? No, that's a bunch of idiots. Okay. This is the media amplifying tiny incidents that aren't even necessarily worthy of coverage. How do we, this back to Dean Baquette, how do we write about race in a thoughtful way? Something we haven't done in a large way in a long time. Really? Dean Baquette, you guys don't write about race over there? Every third article isn't talking about how white men are the problem and diversity and gender and yada, yada, yada. You guys write about race plenty. Don't try and tell me you haven't written about race in a large way in a long time. Unless you have no short-term memory whatsoever. In which case, you can probably pick up yesterday's edition and find some examples. Back to Dean Baquette. That, to me, is the vision for coverage for the rest of the next 2 years. And as the Post says, this isn't journalism. It's political activism aligned with the talking points of Democrats. And to liken race relations today to those in the 1960s, as Baquette does, is beyond ignorant. Agreed, agreed, agreed. The August 12th meeting was held after an uproar over a headline deemed too friendly to Trump. Trump urges unity versus racism didn't convey a sufficient dose of Trump hatred, so Baquette had it rewritten to criticize the president's sober remarks after the mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton. One of those, by the way, was racially motivated. The other one we still don't know. But here's the New York Times. President comes out and says, we need to unite and racism. Whether he's sincere or not, he says it in a moment of national tragedy, a moment of national pain, and the New York Times has to run in and criticize him for it. Now, we get further into this. Even that wasn't enough to sate the monster he created, so Baquette assembled the newsroom to hear the grievances and explain his thinking. I'd imagine that's challenging for him. Though none of those asking questions are identified, they are indistinguishable in wanting the paper to regularly call Trump a racist and a liar. These are supposedly straight news reporters and editors, yet are unrestrained in demanding that their partisan opinions dictate coverage. One staffer asks Baquette, quote, could you explain your decision not to more regularly use the word racist in reference to the president's actions? End quote. If I am the editor of that newspaper, that reporter is fired on the spot. You're fired. Gone. You take your opinion, you take your bias, you take your First Amendment rights, and you leave my office. You leave the building. You are unfit for the Times. Another wonders, quote, you mentioned that there could be situations when we would use the word racist. What is that standard? Also fired. A third sees, quote, racism and white supremacy being sort of the foundation of this country. This is a New York Times staffer. Racism and white supremacy being sort of the foundation of this country. I just feel like racism is in everything. It should be considered in our science reporting, in our culture reporting, in our national reporting. Another asks, what is the overall strategy here for getting us through this administration? This is your staff. These are the reporters and the editors of the New York Times. You have somebody working there who believes white supremacy is the foundation of the United States of America. That's insane. That is an utterly insane belief. But this is what informs the editorial decisions of the New York Times. And the New York Times informs the reality of our nation. So what do you get when you get the inmates running the asylum? You get an entire nation that's gone mad. And this is where it comes from. This is where it begins. I said it was a bad week for the New York Times. That's just part of it. Breitbart. And again, I'm not giving them the click. I'm not giving them the attention on this. Not a good news source. But broken clock, right twice a day. This came from Red State. Anti-Semitic tweets from New York Times political editor exposed day after publishing scathing editorial about Trump's anti-Semitism. So the New York Times is writing about how Donald Trump is an anti-Semite. Well, their political editor, Tom Wright Piersante, has had some interesting things to say on Twitter, again, over the years. He is the current senior political editor at the New York Times. January 1st, 2010, he wrote this. I was going to say crappy Jew year, but one of my resolutions is to be less anti-Semitic. So happy Jew year, you Jews. This is your New York Times senior political editor, ladies and gentlemen. December 15th, 2009, he tweeted a photo of a vehicle with a menorah on top and wrote, "Who called the Jew police?" Not making it up. Wright Piersante apparently doesn't care for Native Americans either. Here are some of his greatest hits. There are four Indian guys with mohawks in this one class, and each one is a feminine cleansing product in his own awful way. I hate Mohawk Indians. He follows that up with, I don't hate Mohawk Indians, though. I love those guys. I just hate Indians with mohawks. Different Indians, different Mohawks. Mohawked Indian guest employee to at Snitkin. Yo, you like these watches? I sell them under the table if you know what I mean. Want to see dozens of Indian girls grind all over each other? Go to the Golden Rail Pub in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Two high-voiced Indian guys keep calling each other dog, and they aren't doing it as a joke. F that S. I can't even read this next one. There's the one after that. With Asian babies, is it racist to say to the parents, "Aw, he looks just like you"? What if you say it before you see any pictures? This is the New York Times senior political editor writing bad racial jokes all over Twitter, writing anti-Semitic jokes on Twitter. Oh, it's just comedy. And by the way, New York Times got all bent out of shape about this. They got all bent out of shape about this. They're like, you're harassing our journalists. No. No, you can't harass somebody with something that they wrote online and left there for other people to find. This is how New York Times senior political editor Tom Wright Piersante thinks. This is what he believes. These are his thoughts shared on Twitter for the world to see. And in the same way, the New York Times has no compunction whatsoever, will not hesitate to take down an average citizen over something that they don't like. We have the right to point out the bad behavior of your reporters. You are not immune, New York Times. That newsroom needs to be cleaned, disinfected. You need to get balance in there. Let me ask a general question. See if you can answer this. Just in your own mind, what were Tom Brokaw's politics? What were Peter Jennings' politics? What were Ted Koppel's politics? What were Walter Cronkite's politics? What were Edward R. Murrow's politics? Were they Democrats? Were they Republicans? Who did they vote for? You can't answer that question unless you've read biographies of them. And there is a reason for that. Because journalists used to take their neutral stance, their lack of bias, seriously. Journalism is akin to science. You cannot do it if you have preconceived notions. Journalism is about embarking on a story with an open mind and going where the facts take you. Not sitting there saying white supremacy is the foundation of the United States of America, and then looking for that in every single story that you write. This is our paper of record. These are the people who are supposed to keep us informed, to help us protect our republic, to help us keep our republic. They are falling down on the job. And Dean Baquet is sitting there. I don't think Baquet is a bad guy, by the way. I don't think he's a bad guy. I think he's the wrong guy for the times. I think Dean Baquet is the kind of guy who in the 70s, or in the late 70s, the 1980s, when it was mostly about, you know, keeping business coverage straight and keeping political coverage even-handed, I think Dean Baquet probably could have done a good job back then. Instead, he's trying to play college professor. He's trying to play Plato and Socrates to a newsroom full of rabid liberals, people who are so far outside the mainstream of American political thought that they believe white supremacy is the basis of our nation. Someone actually said this in the New York Times during a staff meeting and suggested that we need to talk about white supremacy in our science coverage and in our political coverage. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Yes, there is a history of white supremacy in the United States. Yes, there were some white supremacists who signed our Constitution. Yes, we have had white supremacists in every branch of our government in the years since. But this country was not founded so that the white man could hold everybody else down. That wasn't the intent. I don't think Ben Franklin was sitting around saying, you know what's great about America? The black man's never going to get ahead. We are building this country to shut out the minorities and to stomp out diversity. It's going to be all white men all the time. Thomas Jefferson may have said that. Ben Franklin did not. George Washington did not. The vast majority of the founding fathers did not hold those views. Alexander Hamilton, come on. Not a white supremacist. The reason we have these people infecting the New York Times, by the way, is because journalism doesn't pay anymore. It used to be that the people who were really good writers would want to go into journalism because you could make a difference and you could make a good living. You can't do that anymore. Writing became a commodity in the era of the internet. So the New York Times is now staffed by former bloggers. And the people who become bloggers do so because they're not really good enough or hardworking enough to get a job that pays with writing ability. If you can write well, you make a great lawyer, you make a great paralegal, you make a great PR specialist, you make a great advertising executive, you make a great corporate communication specialist. The problem with that is you're working 60 hours a week, 80 hours a week. Kiss your social life goodbye. You make a damn good living doing it. I've kept a roof over my head my entire life because I can write. And I spent some time as a journalist back when journalism didn't pay much, but it paid something and was still an honorable profession. Those days are gone. And because we don't reward journalism anymore, we get people who would never, never, 20 years ago, have gotten past the front door of a newspaper or a website. They would have walked in and said something political and they would have been gone. And that's what Dean Baquet should be doing. When people are putting their hands up saying, when can we use the word racist? You're fired. I believe white supremacy is the foundation of our country. You're fired. Because if you're going to walk into this office and hold that view, I can't trust anything that you're going to write. We are the New York Times. This is the paper of record. This is the basis of our written history. since it was first published in the mid-19th century. The New York Times is one of the most important historical documents, every edition, that we have. And look at who's running it now. And you wonder why this country is so messed up. You wonder why everybody is so divided. Because the people who pay attention to this look at the New York Times and they say, my God, the New York Times is saying Donald Trump is a racist. It must be true. And then in the next breath, some random university professor is saying Olive Garden is donating to the Trump re-election campaign. Well, that must be true, too. The whole world is ending. They've completely abdicated their responsibility because they have the wrong man in charge. Dean Baquet needs to go. Reassign him. Go let him work at some other news outlet. He is not fit to the task that he has. And if the New York Times is smart, they will replace him. They will clean house of the activists masquerading as journalists in their midst. And they will go back to reporting the news. And guess what? A lot of people who stopped reading that publication will start reading it again. 855-915-9636. It is The Big Picture, still to come. What's Hot? My favorite thing from the past week. Thing that happened, the strangest thing from the past week, and at 9 o'clock, On the Town with Mikey D with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. But before that, a little travel suggestion for your Memorial Day weekend. Or Memorial Day? Wow. A little travel suggestion for your Labor Day weekend.
If you're fond of sand dunes and the salty air, quaint little villages here and there, you're sure to fall in love with old Cape Cod. If you like the taste of a lobster stew served by a window with an ocean view, you're sure to fall in love with old Cape Cod. Winding roads that seem to beckon you, miles of green beneath the skies of blue, church bells chiming on a Sunday morn remind you of the town where you were born. If you spend an evening, then you'll want to stay, watching the moonlight on old Cape Cod Bay. You're sure to fall in love with old Cape Cod.
The international struggles of our world may lead to
nuclear holocaust.
To survive, you must have protection from radioactive fallout.
In the past, heavy equipment necessitated a long, costly operation for out-of-home shelter installation.
Today, Survive All basement-type shelters offer a combination steel and concrete do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved, Survival offers maximum protection from fallout and falling debris, plus a basic equipment kit for family survival.
There's low initial cost and FHA approval. Nothing down in 5 years to pay.
For your family's protection, see a Survival shelter today.
Hey everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Medford 91.5 FM. It is the waning moments of the big picture. Time for What's Hot, my favorite thing from the past week. In this case, of the week ahead. If you've never done this, if you find yourself looking for something to do this Labor Day, I have this recommendation for you. Go find the bar that the locals hang out at and be there at sunset on Labor Day. I'll give you an example. The Chart Room. I've done this down there. They are in, what town are they in? Catamount, Massachusetts, down there on the Cape. All the locals gather at the Chart Room on Labor Day. And as the sun goes down, they raise a toast and they celebrate the end of another summer season. So if you're near one of those resort towns, find yourself the place where the locals go and hang out and go party with them. Go enjoy those final moments of summer and welcome in the coming autumn, because Lord knows we've got enough Sam Oktoberfest, Dunkin' Donuts, pumpkin lattes, and Shipyard Pumpkinhead Ale floating around for us to think that autumn is already here. We close out every week, as we do every week, I should say, with That's a Thing That Happened. The strangest story from the past week. Detroit, Rock City. We don't usually get to Detroit, but that's where the action is this week. This may be the most expensive liquor store robbery in U.S. history. On Saturday night, at least two thieves stole an excavator on Detroit's west side. They drove it several blocks and straight through the front door of JR Party Store, then proceeded to loot bottles of scotch. The store suffered $150,000 in structural damage and lost $75,000 in liquor to breakage or theft. Also missing is the $200,000 excavator, whose owner was hoping to retrieve it on Sunday. That, the excavator, is believed to be in the possession of the Detroit Police Department. Next time, guys, just use a hammer or a rock to break the window. You don't need